RadioInfluence.com. This is Landry Football on Radio Influence, the only podcast where you can get perspective of what happened on the gridiron through the eyes of a coach, scout, and front office administrator. Now, it's time to step into the film room. Here's Chris Landry.
And welcome to this holiday edition of the Landry Football Podcast. It is Thursday, December 21st. Where is this year gone? Want to take this time to thank each and every one of you that have joined us this fall. We started the Landry Football Podcast and being part of our family, particularly those of you who have become part of the LandryFootball.com family. And we encourage you, if you haven't done so yet, what a great opportunity to join LandryFootball.com. If you want to get the inside information of what's going on around the college and NFL game, as well as the film room breakdowns, the best opportunity to do it yet is this time of year before December 31st or through December 31st. It's our best discount. You get a full year, $49.99. Folks, it's normally $99.99. It's half price, but it's now, if you take the percentages off, it's as good as you can get in terms of a discount. You can try us out for a month, 3 months, 6 months, but for the year, listen, it'll take you through the rest of this football season, take you through recruiting, which we've already started, free agency, draft, all next football season. So what a great opportunity to get the best discount that we have. So check us out. We appreciate you more than you know. I want to remind you, too, if we can help you in your business, if we can help spread the word about your business, and you want to become part of our family, contact us at LandryFootball.com, and we'll tell you how you can become a part and be a sponsor here on this podcast. Going forward, we hope to make 2018 even better. And yes, we're going to be here. We're going to figure out if we're going to do it twice a week or once a week during the off season. But there's so much football to talk about. College football, the NFL, of course, we've got the games through the Super Bowl, but we've got so much going on. More news in the NFL in the off season than college football, because once you get recruiting put to bed, there's there's minimal stuff. We talk about it when there is stuff, but there's minimal stuff to talk about in college football. But there are stuff, and we address that. But then we've got so much free agency, draft preparation that takes you through the off season, which is really the business season. Get you ready for the football season. Excuse me. But anyway, if you want to be a part of our, and we can help you and become part of our family, and we can help you with your business, we want to be able to do that. So we want to get to talk a little bit, start off with the focus of what we talked about on Tuesday. Yesterday was big early signing day, first day of early signing day. And yes, today and Friday are continuums of early signing day. And then at this stage, we have over 2,000 players signed around the country by the end of Friday. We'll have about another 400 that are committed, which will leave about 400 or so that are not committed, that are still top prospects for the entire country, which makes the focus on recruiting in February more intense for those, more information around those, but obviously not the hysteria, not the multitude of news that was yesterday on signing day. How did it go for you? Did you like it? Personally, I don't like dropping it in the middle of bowl season and the end of NFL season. Personally, I like it when it had its own window in February. That's selfish on my part. That's what I like. We're still going to cover it. And just as a word of note, we've got information and we'll continue to update in our notebooks and on the website for our members, you can find out about the latest of who signed where and who's done what and what we think about them and how they fit and all that. We're going to go more in depth with who your school signed, with the scouting report on all those players as time permits. Again, that's something that I need to have more time to do to get up there that is not as big of a priority as getting the bowl film room breakdowns and getting the NFL breakdowns, the game breakdowns, or head towards the playoffs. So as and getting started on putting you for you the, all the draft stuff that we have been working on, and we want to get to you as well. So there's a lot that converges at the same time. So we're going to get to it. For those of you that want to know that, it just bear with us. It just takes some time to do quality. We're not trying to do like most people and throw a bunch of stuff there and a bunch of five-star this and stuff that quite frankly doesn't tell you a whole lot, and it's just a lot of hype. We'll try to get to the cut to the chase. But observations, folks, overall, and you never know how this will turn out in terms of a quality class. Why? Kids have to get into school. They have to, and you should already know that going in, where the kid qualifies or not. But he has to stay in school is what I mean. He has to do his schoolwork. He has to do the right things off the field. He has to be of good character. You know, he has to stay out of trouble, and he has to stay with the program, and he has to stay committed to football. And a lot of times kids, they're young and they don't have the same type of motivation that people might think. And they lose their passion for the game, or maybe don't have it, or, you know, but there are always some issues that take place that maybe prevent them from being achieving their full level of potential. But something that it's pretty clear in some general observations as it relates to the southeast part of the country, Midwest, a lot of signings. You got Georgia with their dominant recruiting class. Why is it dominant? Lots of quality in 23 signings. I believe they're going to sign 25. They only got two left. Recruiting class is done, virtually. Most sign the majority of their class. Out in the west part of the West Coast, not as many signed as many players. So there's more work to do there. It's a little bit more of a slower pace recruiting out there, and we'll see that heat up. But evaluating classes can be tricky. Everybody's got their rankings, and everybody looks at this and that. Folks, it's this whole thing, this team's ranked one and this team's ranked eighth, doesn't mean anything. And I hate to tell you, you know, if you rank one or you rank eight and you think, oh boy, you slipped, that's not true. First of all, recruiting is about acquiring talent to make your team better, just like the draft is about that. It's not about getting a grade from a website as to who's best. It's not what it's about. It's never been what it's about, and it's a false narrative that people buy into, and they get disappointed based upon the results. What it's about is filling needs with quality, making your team better. You've got to do that. It's about evaluating players that fit what you need and what you do and what fits your scheme. Now, a lot of these guys at the high school level, they're very moldable. Their bodies are not quite developed like they will be, and you can make them into the player that you want. But how a player fits what you want to do is important. And how does he fit into the character of your program, the work ethic, all those things need to be vetted and vetted clearly. And then did you feel some needs? I mean, that's really pivotal. Always staying on top of where your class of your program is in terms of depth at each position. Who do you have coming back? Who are you losing? And hopefully you've fulfilled those needs in the past in anticipation of that, and now you have to feel the back end of it so that young guys can come in and augment what you already have. In some cases, and you see this with junior college signings, there are guys that come in and they're plug-and-play guys. Need to play early. It's a little dangerous when you are forced to play a guy young. It's best when you can sign a player, and then if he surprises you and starts early, that's great. But I think playing him young is an indication that you've struggled a little bit in your previous classes. So when you look at the numbers and you look at the rankings and put it in perspective, but there is no doubt in terms of quality, the players that I've looked at, which are in that top 300 to 400 player range, Georgia has signed the most of them. And they are definitely, with how Kirby Smart is building his program, it is very much like he learned from his time at Alabama with Nick Saban. Putting together the support staff, putting together philosophy of how you evaluate players and how it starts from the GAs to the analysts to the vetting of all the details so that coaches don't waste time doing all of that. That once all that stuff is handled and then it passes a certain criteria, then you'll see the position coach, then the coordinator look at him. And you go from there. And then the head coach will look at him. It's a thorough process. It's one that maximizes the coach's skill sets and time and minimalizes the waste of gathering a lot of information. It's changed a lot since I was basically myself and one other guy, Coach Sam Nader at LSU, we basically handled all of it. It's a lot different today. It's a lot more streamlined, and you've got a lot better technology to be able to track information and keep it and organize it. A lot of people are involved. And that's the way it was done at Alabama. That's the way it's being done at Georgia. And the results, well, let's look at Georgia for a second. They are playing in the national playoffs. That is an indication of a couple of things. First of all, Kirby Smart didn't recruit all these players. Recruited some of them. There's a lot of players that Mark Richt recruited. But look at what Kirby Smart's done with them. He's given them an edge. He's given them a toughness that, quite frankly, was a little lacking under Mark Richt. Not to be overly critical that it was lacking, but relative to where Georgia wants to be and where they are now, it was below this standard now. And Kirby's done a phenomenal job getting those guys to play with an edge. Now, people were alarmed last year. Wait a minute. Struggling with Nichols. Why does that happen in the first year? Folks, I've said it before. I want to explain it again. When you go in that first year, you're laying down the law. You're determining here's how it's going to get done, and guys don't know how to react to that. They resist in a lot of cases with that, for that. Well, eventually, the ones that learn it, survive it, adjust, and the ones that don't are gone. We're seeing this year a team that's well-coached, tough, got better, got their nose rubbed in it, and Jordan Hare came back, took care of business in the national playoffs. So you've got the on-the-field pedigree. Now you've got, for the second year in a row, and last year was a good recruiting class, this year is off the charts good. Folks, it is pretty clear to say that Georgia has joined Alabama in terms of elite status in the country of the SEC teams. And certainly has joined Clemson in the elite status. The difference is Georgia hadn't done it as long as Clemson, it certainly hasn't done it as long as Alabama. We'll see if they can produce the results going forward. But already, to this point in the year, getting into the national playoffs is ahead of schedule for Kirby and Georgia. And getting the number one recruiting class, dominating and taking players away is what Alabama did for years. They're doing that. There's clearly, as I have said, Alabama has separated themselves from the rest of the SEC. That is no longer the case. They still may be the big dog. And I still think going forward, Alabama's the team and the program to beat in the SEC. But make no mistake that Georgia is barking loudly and getting right into that mix. Very impressive job. Clemson doing an outstanding job. Hey, Ohio State did a great job as well. It was lost a little luster yesterday in that they lost some key guys that they thought maybe they would get. And I think anytime you lose a guy like that, like Jackson Carman from right there in Fairfield, Ohio, outside of Cincinnati, a big offensive tackle, that's tough. There's no doubt about that. Losing Emory Jones, you know, and wasn't really high on him. Emory Jones is going to be a really good quarterback for Dan Mullen and the Gators. Really, really good move for them. Got to be excited about that. But they've done a nice job. Penn State doing a nice job. You know, a little bit disappointing, a little bit concerning is, you know, Michigan. And where are they? They certainly are not where Ohio State and Penn State is recruiting-wise in the Big Ten. The rest of the SEC, pretty good. Pretty good. You see the effect of Dan Mullen at Florida. You see Auburn doing a really good job. LSU filled some needs, not a great class, but filled some needs. But, you know, Alabama, Georgia, Auburn, Florida, along with Georgia, outstanding. When I look out Texas way, boy, the Longhorns, after a struggling start last year in Tom Herman's first recruiting class, boy, did they rebound and show their recruiting prowess. What a secondary. They've got 21 signings. Really good group. The aforementioned Mark Richt at Miami. Good-looking class. Mark's done a good job recruiting. He'll do a good job. He'll be great for Miami. What you wonder is, can he do something that he didn't do at Georgia? And that's get Miami over the top and get them to where they can finish, where they can do it with consistency on the field. They've had talent at Miami, and I think he'll be good for that program to run off the bad kids that can maybe tend to infiltrate that program. Oklahoma, nice job as well. Notre Dame, Brian Kelly doing a good job signing 20. I mentioned Michigan, good class. Listen, it's a good class. It's not as what Penn State and Ohio State is, but it's a good group signing 20. I mentioned LSU. 21 kids, they'll add Terrence Marshall. It's a good class. It's not Auburn's class. It's not Alabama's class. It's certainly not Georgia's class. I mean, it's a good class. Just not maybe at that elite level, but pretty good group. Oregon doing a nice job on a Mario Cristobal. I thought Virginia Tech with 28 signings. Getting their whole class, big, big time for them. I mentioned out West, programs don't sign a lot, but Washington did. Great job with 18. Chris Peterson, very underrated in terms of finding the right type of guys, and I just think is a hand-in-glove fit there. Outstanding job. Impressed with what Baylor did. Getting a number of good players to go there. South Carolina, nice job. TCU, Mississippi State, and Joe Moorhead. Ole Miss and Matt Luke. Circumstances that they're in, what a really good jobs that they did in state. Texas A&M off to a little slow start, as you might expect, but they're going to rally, and that's going to be a recruiting strength. Maybe look at them a little bit like you look at Texas last year. Next year are going to be really good. So those are some of the thoughts, and there are a lot of programs that I think have done a good job, and we'll keep you up to date on the latest. Follow me on Twitter, at Landry Football, and see where things head in terms of where the best players are headed from here on out. As far as a look at some of the best players in the country, signed Justin Fields, of Harrison High School in Kennesaw, Georgia. Phenomenal talent. Quarterback at time with Georgia, and you say, well, what are they going to do there? Well, I expect Jacob Eason to move on. But what a great talent this guy is. He's got the dual threat capabilities that as they move forward, and Jake Fromm has done a phenomenal job, if they want a more mobile guy, they'll have their options. They'll have a couple of options there that they can win with their defense and running game. Trevor Lawrence, hey, Clemson continues to get quarterback after quarterback. Phenomenal. Couple of elite edge rushers, Xavier Thomas from Bradenton, Florida, IMG Academy, Clemson. Again, Amabi Anoma from Baltimore, Alabama gets him. K.J. Henry, Winston-Salem, Clemson. You see Clemson again. Three of the top five players in the country went to Clemson. Penn State getting a great one in Micah Parsons from Harrisonburg, Pennsylvania. Defensive end, Justin Shorter, a receiver from Jersey. Outstanding group. Best players left, Patrick Surtain. You might remember his dad, Patrick Surtain, played at Southern Miss, played in the league. He's from Plantation, Florida. Alabama, Arkansas, Auburn, Clemson, amongst those in a race for him. Keep in mind that when people are looking at Alabama's class and they're saying, well, wait a minute, well, why aren't they ranked that high? Remember that they're ranked pretty high. They're ranked sixth. They only got 18 signings. In the remaining, they're only going to sign 23. So the remaining five that they sign, folks, they're going to be all elite players. So when it's all said and done, Alabama's class is going to be right there with Georgia's and Clemson's, as they always are. They're a little bit more selective. They've lost a couple of guys that they wanted to Georgia, but let's see if they can get other guys that they expect to get and finish out. Let's see what the five remaining spots look like. That's going to be pivotal. But Devon Williams from Lancaster, California is another guy. Terrence Marshall from Bossier City, Louisiana, we feel is an LSU guy. Tyson Campbell from Plantation, Florida is another one. Nick Petit-Ferrer out of Tampa, big offensive tackle. Justin Watkins, Claremont, Florida. Some other guys we're waiting on to see where they sign, if they sign here in the next couple of days, or wait until February. Kelvin Joseph, the corner from Scottonville Magnet High School in Baton Rouge. Joshua Moore from Yoakum, Texas, another athlete. Jacob Copeland, Pensacola, Escambia wide receiver. Tanner McKee, quarterback from Corona, California. Amon Roy St. Brown, receiver from Mater Dei and Anaheim, another one. Those are amongst the top 50 players. William Barnes, the guard from Apopka, Florida, are the ones that are the top 50 remaining that have not yet committed or signed. We'll see how that plays out going forward here. Got some junior college kids that jumped out. Antoine Jackson, the defensive tackle from Blinn College, originally from Elwood, Georgia, going to Ohio State. Savion Smith, St. Petersburg, Florida, former LSU guy going to Alabama. Stephon Guidry, Hines Community College from Marganza, Louisiana, big receiver on a Mississippi State. Great get for them. Kentucky getting Terry Wilson, dual-threat quarterback, Garden City Community College. Great for them. Trevez Moore, outside backer from Colin, going to LSU. Good signing for them. Junior colleges are where you can get some immediate help, plug in a hole, not how you want to base your recruiting unless you're a program like a Kansas State that has to kind of live off of it. I think Mississippi State's done a really good job with it in the past. But you kind of want to fill in with those type of guys. So that's a look at recruiting, and we'll keep you up to date at LandryFootball.com. Check us out. Bowl game last night. Gosh, a mighty SMU. What an awful performance. It's one of the things about the bowl games, and you hear me preach about how I love the bowl games, and I do. I can't tell you that I enjoyed watching that game last night. It was not a game. Louisiana Tech destroyed SMU, mistake after mistake after mistake. SMU coaching changes. Sonny Dykes there. He's a lot of the distractions. Folks, the timing that exists in college football is just not good. It's not good for the coaching changes. You're playing in bowl games. You have to get recruiting done. So you have to make changes after the season. It's difficult, no doubt about it. And I don't think there's an easy answer there's really not an answer to truly fix it the way we'd all like it fixed. But a lot of these games end up being bad performances as a result, and this was one of them. Hopefully we'll get a better one tonight, St. Petersburg. Butch Davis doesn't get enough credit for the job that he's done at Florida International playing Temple. Jeff Collins doing a nice job there. We'll see if that's a better performance. Friday night, he'll get UAB in Ohio in the Bahamas Bowl. Frank Sulich has just done such a great job there in Athens. Good team there. Remember, we got all the film room breakdowns for you on all of these games. Bill Clark doing a great job at Alabama-Birmingham. Looks like Josh Allen is going to play on Friday night in the Potato Bowl against Central Michigan. So look forward to that. This weekend, we've got Texas Tech in South Florida, in Birmingham. On Saturday, we'll have San Diego State, Army, lots of running the football in those games. Appalachian State, Toledo. Toledo, a good team. And how about Toledo? Getting a couple of four-star players in recruiting yesterday. Outstanding job by them. Then Sunday, in Hawaii, we've got Fresno State, Houston. Jeff Tedford doing a really good job. You can see this Houston team, very good team as well. Fresno State's defense, can they score enough offense? We'll see how that plays out on the island. So, and of course, we'll be back on Tuesday for our next podcast the day after Christmas, and then we'll have the game day for Utah, West Virginia, Duke, Northern Illinois, and Kansas State, UCLA, and we'll start to get into the games that will be into next week. So we'll get closer and closer towards the big matchups. In the NFL this weekend, it's getting close to the time where two things. Obviously, it is you-know-what cutting time in terms of playoff race. Playoff spots are still available, still fighting. The big game, we're going to have the complete breakdown of Atlanta, Falcons, the Saints. That big matchup, how that is going to play out, how we think give Saints a big edge here at home. We'll see how that plays out. It's going to determine likely the South, as I expect the Saints to take care of Tampa in the last week of the year. We'll see. Also want to look at Rams and Tennessee, a lot at stake there. Buffalo, New England. Right now, New England, Pittsburgh, Jacksonville, Kansas City, we get that fourth slot, but we'll see how things play out in terms of who makes it in the wild card. Who gets that fifth spot right now would be Buffalo. Baltimore probably is in better position to get it with the Bills having to play New England this week. In the NFC, in Philadelphia, hold on to home field advantage. Minnesota, hold on to a bye. It looks like it. Then where does it put the 3 and the 4 seed with the Rams, the Saints, the Saints, the Rams? The Saints can beat Atlanta. We'll see. It's going to be a lot of intrigue this week. We'll break down all the games for you. Again, up on LandryFootball.com. Seattle, Dallas. Dallas gets Zeke Elliott back. They're hanging on, both of these teams, you know, both at 8-6, 8-6. It's a stay alive in the playoff type of game. That's going to be in the second window on Sunday. Remember, all these games on Christmas Eve. Detroit trying to hold on against Cincinnati. Likely going to happen. Can Kansas City hold on, beat Miami at home? You would expect they could. We'll see. Carolina take care of business at home against Tampa? I would think so. Jacksonville go on the road to San Francisco. San Francisco playing well. Good young defensive line. Garoppolo playing well. Pittsburgh Monday night. Christmas night. It's actually afternoon. Go to Houston. Take care of business. I think they should. Houston team is really struggling. Philadelphia at home against the Raiders. Close out things and basically get the home field advantage secured as they absolutely needed with their current situation. Folks, we're also in a position to where we're about a week away from getting to some more coaching changes. Looks like it could be one in Tampa, Cincinnati, Indianapolis, maybe Denver, Chicago, possibly in Houston, possibly in Arizona, in terms of Bruce Arians walking away. And I wouldn't rule out Cleveland either. I think we're going to have 6 to 8. Folks, we have a quarter of the league turnover every year. It happens. Got a GM opening still in New York with the Giants, Dave Gettleman. Nice visit with them. We'll see if he's the guy, if they want to go with someone that's maybe, a little younger, a little bit more administrative-oriented. Dave's certainly a great personnel guy. Going to get into a podcast maybe next week about how the role of a GM has changed a little bit in the NFL. And quite frankly, one of the things that, and I grew up in it, and what was my strength, is kind of being marginalized a little bit. And it's more of guys that are just the people person, that they're just the leaders. They're not really the strong football guys. How that's changed over the years. And to some cases, it's worked out well. Top head coaching candidates. Listen, Josh McDaniels, Jim Bob Cooter, Mike Vrabel, Matt Nagy, Dave Tobe, Pat Shermer, John DeFilippo. We'll see how some of those names start to shake up. You know, the thing about head coaching jobs in the league, if you look at them, they're not as much recycling. You'll hear Jeff Fisher's name been brought in. I don't know how well that will be received. But you know, what you mostly see is the up-and-coming coordinators. That's who people hire. We'll see how that plays out, and we'll keep you up to date on where people are leaning as the coaching searches get rounded in a circle. Want to, again, wish you all a Merry Christmas. And we're not ready to wish you a Happy New Year yet. We'll be back for that. But Merry Christmas, Happy Hanukkah, Kwanzaa, whatever you celebrate. We appreciate you joining us all football season. And want to remind you, if you got a question that you want me to address here in this podcast, send it to us on the website, and we'll get right to it. Have a great, safe time with your family. Enjoy this football weekend. Faith, family, football, food. It's a great time of year, folks. So be safe on the road. Look after your loved ones. Enjoy your football. We'll be here to break it down for you next week. Thanks again. And once again, Merry Christmas. Happy holidays, everyone.
To get more of Chris's knowledge, visit and subscribe to LandryFootball.com. You can also find him on Twitter at LandryFootball. This has been Landry Football on Radio Influence.
Here is Kevin Kennedy and Rich Herrera with an Inside the Dugout Quick Fix.
Let me run through all of this for you. So we talk about luxury tax. It's not really called luxury tax. Its actual name is the competitive balance tax.
Right.
And this is from MLB.com. Those who carry payrolls above the threshold are taxed on each dollar above the threshold, and the tax rate increasing based on the number of consecutive years a club has exceeded that threshold. The threshold was $189 million in 14, 15, and 16, but the following increases were put together in this next collective bargaining agreement. So 2017, the luxury tax was $195 million. 218, it's 197, 219, it's 206, and so on and so forth. The reason I bring this up is there's a penalty that goes along with this as well. So if you're over the competitive balance tax, the luxury tax.
For simple terms, we call it the luxury tax.
The luxury tax. So the first time you're over the luxury tax, right, you get taxed 20% on all the overages. So if you spent more than $195 million, every dollar that you spend, you pay a 20 cents tax back to the rest of baseball.
Right. You're paying a $1.20. That's what you're paying.
Okay. So when you exceed that threshold for the second consecutive year, that figure goes up to 30%. Three or more straight seasons of exceeding that threshold comes to a 50% luxury tax. Now, here's the important thing for Dodger fans and Yankee fans as well.
Yep, that's right.
If you dip below that tax, you reset the clock. So If I'm above 1 year, I pay 20. I'm above 2 years, I pay 30. If I continue, I'm above 50, and I get to that 50 point, all I got to do is get below the threshold once, and I reset the tax back to 20%. Clubs that exceed that threshold by $20 million to $40 million are also subject to a 12% surtax. Meanwhile, those who exceed it by more than $40 million are taxed at 42.5% rate of the first 45% they exceed more than $40 million. In the beginning of 2018, clubs that were $40 million or more above the threshold shall have their highest selection in the Rule 4 draft move back 10 places unless the pick falls into the top six. So if you're way above this luxury tax, the way the Dodgers have been 5 straight years, Yankees have been 15 straight years, you got to get right under the CBA.
Inside the Dugout with Kevin Kennedy and Rich Herrera can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and RadioInfluence.com.